Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Show. We are so proud to have you with us, and thank you to everyone at Blog Talk Radio who supports our show so much. We always appreciate it when we're featured or when we're tweeted about or whatever. So we love our at Blog Talk Radio people who love at Best Ever You and who love the Best Ever You Show. So it's making us some, you know, we're having some really great fan support. We're over 1 million downloads now. We're very thankful for all of you sharing and listening to the show. And I'm told that's a hard thing to achieve on internet radio, 1 million downloads. So we're over that now, and we're gonna have some just wonderful guests. Speaking of a wonderful guest, we have the coolest. I love this gal is coming on, Pina De Rosa. We're gonna have a chat with Pina today. She's one of my favorite people to chat with. She's so wise and wonderful, and so we're gonna have her on with us for the full hour. Well, not us, because Katie's not here. So I guess it's just me. Hi, Pina. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Dr. Katie's at the hospital today, so you've got me, and so we're just going to have a chat, so you get to be guest/host. So any direction you want to take the conversation, and you go for it. But I think
everything
today,
okay with Katie sending?
Oh yeah, no, she's a doctor, so she's a therapist
working.
And so forth. So she's working.
Doing
yeah,
her
she's not
duty.
On her way
beautiful.
To the hospital, literally.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay.
Yeah. So let me just back up for a second and mention our sponsor. Our radio shows and our website and our community are always sponsored by Del Amore. They are our fine friends in Vermont. It's a pasta sauce company. And Pina, you get to hear my story a little bit. When I first moved to Maine in 2004, I was one of those tired mamas of four boys ages 3, 5, 7, and 9. I had four car seats in my car, and my husband was working, and I was at home with all the kids, and I was extremely tired on this particular day and had all four kids shopping with me. And I said, you know, I am not going to cook homemade pasta sauce this evening. I am going to grab some and stick it in a pan and pretend I made it. So I did just that, and I happened to grab a couple jars of Del Amore. This is a true story. I went home, and I put them on the stove like I had been slaving away all day or whatever, making my husband's grandma's pasta sauce, which he loves. And I threw the jars in the garbage, and I pretended like I had made it. And he was sitting there at dinner, and all the kids, too, and they're like, wow, this is the best pasta sauce ever. I was just like my seriously, tastes just like my grandma's. Oh, my God.
You're like
you
a
know,
commercial.
You really nailed it this time, honey, you know, kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, I must confess. And, you know, the kids were totally ratting at me out, too. I was like, Mom didn't make that, you know, kind of thing. And so, but he was really serious, and, you know, he was raised with his grandma of really making pasta sauce from scratch, which, you know, is a baffling process to me, basically. So thank goodness for Del Amore. And anyway, we loved the pasta sauce so much, I called Frank Del Amore, who is the owner, and we've had a great relationship since 2004. And they've supported Best Ever You, and we've supported Del Amore, and we're just big fans. So you can visit them at DelAmore.com. You can order pasta sauce online, or there is a store locator. Over the past, it's almost 9 years now, I've seen them grow from just having pasta sauce in a couple of states to all over the country, and they were just featured in Cooking Light magazine. So it's really a cool story of helping each other grow and thrive and stuff. So we love them. Okay, so that's my Del Amore story. Kind of fun,
love
huh,
it.
Pina? It's pretty fun.
Love it.
Yeah,
well,
all right.
Love it.
Well, so I'm glad I made that choice. We're going to talk about different choices today.
Yes,
I think,
choice,
yeah,
choice, exactly.
Choice. Yeah, exactly. And
it's the word of the day.
I don't know if that's a choice that defined me, but we're going to talk about choices that we make that define us and the moments that we hope never will. And I think that's on a really serious note. That's a quote really from you. And I love this quote from you. You're a quote gal sometimes. You know, you can either be a, quote, leaf in the wind or you can be the wind. And that's from your website. And as you always say that out loud, your website is pinaderosa.com. It's pinaderosa.com. And you can also follow Pina on Twitter at Grace and Passion, or you can find her on Facebook. But in our interview today, we're going to talk about choice. And, you know, I would love to hear your story about why you talk about choices.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on the show, because one of my just passions is to be able to empower by just sharing. So the ability to talk with you allows me to share instead of me just talking to myself.
It's kind of nice when you get to go on radio shows and stuff, because it sort of gives you a vehicle to just reach people.
And I love listening to radio shows, you know, out there, and to be able to hear other guest speakers. So to be one today, I appreciate it, because I know your listeners, especially with over 1 million downloads, they're committed listeners. So what a gift to be able to contribute to them. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for being here.
Yes, my pleasure. I know we've done this a couple of times, and we'll probably do it again. Yeah. And the reason I think you and I decided to connect specifically on choices today, recently, you know, I've been a speaker for about 12, 13 years now, and I just love it. And it's really about the effectiveness of our mind. And I've always been curious about how come some people create a life that they love, and some people want to create it, but they're not quite there yet. What's the difference that makes the difference? And that's really where my work comes in with my clients, to really empower them to take out the obstacles that are in the way to where they want to go. And recently, I was given the opportunity to share on the TED platform. And TED, for those of you who may or may not know about it, it's just simply TED.com. It's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that allows people to share, kind of like YouTube, in a really smart YouTube. Like, it's, all the talks are 18 minutes long or less, but no more than usually 18 minutes. And people like Steve Jobs have spoken at TED, and people like James Cameron, and 18-year-olds or 11-year-olds, like all people of all walks of life. So it's a really great platform that allows people from all around the world to, their tagline is ideas worth spreading. And they've asked me to speak specifically about what it takes to live a life of purpose, and I chose to speak about choices and the impact of our choices. So today, I thought would be really cool to, you know, take off from there. And for those of you, I know, Elizabeth, you've seen the TED Talk, but for those of you who would want to see it, it's available online, it's free, share it with your world. It's really the impact of how easy it is to make choices when it's easy. It's like, no big deal, we just make choices and we go. But really the difference that it makes, and how much even more crucial it is to make choices when we don't like any of the options, or when it looks like we have no options, or where the options might have been a bit tough. And, you know, for those of you who might watch it online, you'll see comments that people, you know, say, oh my gosh, there's some insights there that was instant empowerment or inspiring, moving. And so that's my intention for today, is to really leave you with something that is inspiring, it's moving you to action, but also gives you something practical. So one of the tools from that TED Talk I will elaborate on today.
Okay. And I also have a chat room going with this show, which I hear you and see you, everyone. Hello, hello, hello. And I just posted a link to Pina's website and also to the TED Talk. So if you want to visit that link is there. And I'll also follow up with an email to our community with the links and the link to the show and everything. So we'll have a comprehensive way to get a hold of Pina after the show.
Yes, 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 yes. So was there anything in particular, I mean, because we could start with questions, or we could start with what you particularly, you know, resonated with or anything you want me to address from that story.
I think we'd like to know more about who you are and what your your story. I mean, does it ruin the TED Talk if we actually hear about your story?
No, not at all.
I mean, I think it'd be powerful.
No spoiler alert.
Here we go. Yeah.
Well, I've been in the U.S. now. I was born and raised in Italy, and I've been in the U.S. now. This year, it'll be 23 years. And I was 10 years old when I heard what I'm guessing was my inner voice say to me, go to Los Angeles. So I was this kid in Italy. You know, I was born and raised there. I didn't even know where Los Angeles was, frankly, somewhere in a movie, right? But for some reason, I chose to listen to what I'm guessing was my inner voice. And I've always had a passion for storytelling and for human potential. So moving to Los Angeles and moving to the U.S. then when I was 18, it brought me to blend those two passions for storytelling and for human potential and become a speaker, a coach, and I also produce short films, so movies that impact and you know, interviews that make a difference. That's my purpose here, is to really share in a way that causes people to be an inspired action. And the story that I shared in that particular TED Talk woke me up at 5 a.m. I remember it was October 29th. I'm not an early riser. I'm not a writer. I'm a speaker, right? So I just go and talk.
But well, I call you a mindset effectiveness expert.
Yes.
That's really important to note that. So you're someone who really helps you to kind of tune into your thoughts and what you're thinking and feeling and really pay attention to that.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky when I was 14, 15 years old. My parents gave me books like The Alchemist and Think and Grow Rich and How to Win Friends and Influence People and the Wayne Dyer books and the Leo Buscaglia books, all the classics that are quite unusual for, I guess, a teen to get into, at least, you know, somewhere in Italy where not all the titles were translated and so on. So I started to, I was also fortunate that I was sent to learn English and so on. So I could read some of that stuff in English and being able to be just, what a world, you know, fascinated. And these are authors that you guys grew up here with here, whereas over there, you know, we had some of them were translated and some of them were not. So the impact of having such authors such early on for me, I think, really made a difference. And then I went on and studied psychology and studied theater, and then I became a certified master hypnotherapist because I always wanted to learn about the brain and how do we get to maximize our own potential. You know, they say we only use 5 or 10% of our brain, and it's like, what's the 90, 95% doing? Like, how can we use all of it? So with working with neurolinguistics programming and psychology and hypnosis and all that, being able to really utilize both ultimately the conscious and the subconscious mind, both. And that's my passion, because oftentimes I find that people are clear on what they want. They're smart. They usually can go say, you know, I want purple, and they go get it. I want yellow, and they go get it. But sometimes we want purple, we want yellow, and there's stuff in the way, and we don't even know what the heck that is. It's like we're in third gear, and we don't know how to shift it back up to fifth or sixth gear. Like we're a Ferrari kind of slowing down, and we're like, what's going on? I know I have all this potential, and I feel in some way I'm not living up to it. So there is some internal push-pull that goes on, and that's my specialty when I go in and take out that stuff. So
yeah,
that's,
and it's not like we're given some infinite amount of time either. You know, you know, I think paying attention to the choices you make, you know, while you're alive and breathing are pretty darn important, and making sure that, you know, if you want purple, you get it, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you make such a salient point. One of my favorite teachers just passed away less than a month ago, Debbie Ford, and, you know, one of the brightest light in our world. And she was 57, mm-hmm. and she just recently passed away. So there is that carpe diem, such a carpe diem feel to life, you know, like living to the fullest. And it doesn't mean we go, 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 do, 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 because as women, we can do that and then we're exhausted and we burn out. And I'm certainly one of the, you know, I've been through that phase as well. But it's more about creating that balance and really creating that impact of what are the choices that we make and how do they define us or how they do not define us. And how do we get to live a life of purpose? Like, really, as kids, you know, our first choice is to get to who do I choose to be? You know, I have a one-year-old little niece that's about to learn to walk any day now. And to see, even just through little videos that I receive of her, because she's overseas back in Europe, to see little videos of her learning how to walk or learning how to dry our own hair and hold a hair dryer and learning to share food and things. Like, how do we make the choices to be who we are? Like, to choose what our life is about and what our purpose is. And how do we let certain choices not define us or certain, you know, events that happen
sometimes
in life.
Sometimes you don't have a choice when it's an event. I mean, there's certainly, and you're pushed into a mode of how are you going to deal with that? You know, what choices are you going to make to deal with that? Are you going to go down, especially if it's something negative happening to you, are you going to go down and spiral with the event, or are you going to overcome, or what's going to go on? So I would love for you to talk more about, you know, your story and some of the choices that you made. And then we'll go into more of some of the broader topics. I love this Wonder Woman to Soul Woman. I am very familiar with the Wonder Woman book and the Wonder Woman syndrome. So it's very interesting. I can't remember that author's name. It's escaping me right now, but there's a book, Wonder Woman. In fact, it's behind me on my shelf, and I don't think I can put the phone down and actually grab it because we're on the radio live. But she was with Best Ever You when we very first started.
My friend Sally just put a post. Is a little picture that she posted earlier this week that she said, I'm not saying I'm Wonder Woman. I'm just saying nobody's ever seen her and me in the same room at the same time.
Oh, that's
so funny. Like, I think all of us could relate to that. So we'll definitely talk about Soul Woman as well. And yes, the story that I was mentioning woke me up at 5 a.m. and I started writing it down furiously. It's something that I'm actually, I shared it publicly on the TED Talk. But this is the first time I'm actually sharing it on radio, because it really took something, and it's still very uncomfortable in some way, to share something like this publicly, because number one, I did not want anyone who might hear the story to think, oh, wow, this happened to you, poor girl, and I didn't want to be seen as weak or fragile. And, you know, I know the difference. There's a big difference between being weak and being vulnerable. There's a lot of strength in vulnerability. But I still resisted sharing the story. And I decided to go through with it with the hope that it would be an inspiration to help people heal something from their past or as a gift for you guys out there and you gals out there in some way. Because this is something that happened 22 years ago when I first moved to America, actually now almost 23, and that only a handful of people had heard of until I decided to then share it publicly. And it's quite a challenge, because that meant to me that if I go public with this, then I would have to share it with my family, and that meant that, you know, sometimes how we want to protect our loved ones from any unnecessary pain, even at the cost of our own self-expression. And then I remember that whole Zen Buddhism part that pain is inevitable, suffering is unnecessary. But yet sometimes, you know, we make choices to protect others from hurt, even at the cost of our own self-expression.
We do all sorts of crazy things in these moments, don't we? Just to... know, and I'm using the word crazy in quotes, meaning, you know, just there's different things that we do that might not be perfectly explainable to other people. But it's what you needed to do for you. And I remember you when you did this, when you first posted this TED Talk, I remember having some emails with you back and forth, and you really were kind of scared about how I don't know if scared is the right word, because you're a brave, courageous person.
Uncomfortable.
But there was some fear there.
Very uncomfortable.
Really uncomfortable. Yeah, and I could feel that in email. So if I could feel that in email and your words, because I don't think we talked on the phone. We were just going back and forth in email a little bit, and I was supporting you the best I could as your friend, saying, it's okay, I'm going to post this too, and once I do, it's going to be out there. And you're like, oh, gosh. But,
I know. And I think what's been helping, and the intention why we're speaking about this today, is because for the women out there and for the men who love them, I've been hearing back for some really great, not so much feedback or, wow, you're such a great speaker, because that to me is not really
relevant,
what makes a difference. But the impact that it has on their lives, the healing, and I remember this talk was recorded live, as TED Talks are. It was on a Saturday morning, and the Thursday night before, I had done a run through with my brother, who happened to be in town that week. So he actually came over and was there at the event live. And I said, so do you think I should really do this? Because I had just shared the story with him that week. He didn't even know it. It was something that I had kept for me. And he said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing him, he's such a great poet in some ways, but he said, you know, there's something that we go through our whole lives, and sometimes we battle against it internally, and we don't even know what the heck it is. And I really feel that when you share a story like this, it'll allow for so many people, it'll be such a gift, because there's so many of us out there that have been hitting up against a wall on something that we didn't even know was holding us back. And by hearing someone else share their journey of what was holding them back and uncovering it and finding it and healing it, it'll probably start a healing journey and a catharsis in some way. It'll be a gift for others.
Yeah, and even
so
if it's
like,
not the exact same thing, too.
Yeah.
I really...
By all means. Yeah. It could be a completely different...
I remember feeling that way exactly with food allergies, going, you know, everybody's going to know I have a serious medical condition.
Yeah.
Is that going to make it? So I've thought that every time I've gone to even apply for a job, every single person is going to know I have a serious medical condition. Is anybody ever going to want to hire me with anaphylactic allergies to nuts and peanuts? That's a real pain in the butt in an office setting, because everybody brings in that stuff. You know, and it just, once you do that, though, you attract the people that you need to help and the people that need to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And it all
becomes an upward
interesting
spiral.
Way of working out, doesn't it?
Oh, the universe makes no mistakes. Definitely. So as far as what happened, so imagine it's now, you know, the summer of 1990. I'm 18 years old. I've just moved to America to go to college. I'm living my dream. It's the first few weeks. And like all college freshmen, I'm just adjusting. You know, I really want to find ways to fit in. I'm bubbly. I'm friendly. I've just moved to this country. But I'm also one of those kids who doesn't really enjoy alcohol because, you know, in Italy, we kind of grow up with wine and coffee, and it's just all in moderation. You know, there is no this thing about 21 years old. And so for me, I don't really enjoy it because it's just not a taboo conversation where I've come from. And so I feel like a bit like a fish out of water when all my dorm mates are enjoying drinking, especially the first few weeks of college. It seems like there's about half the campus that's like, woohoo, party time, and then half the campus that's like, no, I'm going to study. So I'm kind of with the half that was like the dorky, nerdy one that was like, yeah, I'm going to study. And one evening, though, because I was there with parties and wanting to meet new people, I find myself in the dorm room of this new group of friends, and then I am actually ending up just with one friend who is a new guy who also is an international student like me, you know, from Europe. And before I can comprehend what's going on, I'm there just with him, and we were having a conversation. And all of a sudden, even after repeatedly saying no, he actually raped me. And in that moment, I just kept thinking to myself, you know, because I was alone in a dorm room, away from my own dorm, my friends weren't there. So after fighting it, I said to myself, okay, this, I remember clearly saying to myself, this is going to be over soon. Do not put up a bigger fight. It's only going to get worse. This is going to be over soon. You'll be safe again. And then perhaps because of the cultural differences, or simply because, you know, I haven't yet quite learned the whole role of campus police, and maybe because I didn't want my family, you know, to say to me, oh, what, gosh, you got to come back home. And, you know, this is my dream. I just started, you know, just moved to this country. And I certainly didn't want anyone, any of my friends to say to me, well, what did you get yourself into? I just never reported it. I just walked back to my dorm that night in the shock, in the disbelief. And I kept thinking to myself, and this is where the choice came in. I said to myself, you cannot be a victim. Make sure this never happens again. And from now on, you got to make choices that keep you safe. So I put it under the rug, and I said to myself, never again. And that's really where the defining moment of, and I remember it was late at night walking back to my dorm and realizing there are choices that we make that define us, and there are moments that we hope never will. And that, to me, was a moment that I was hoping never would. And in that moment, Elizabeth, I thought I was making a choice to take control of it, but subconsciously there was so much trauma with it that I was actually, I didn't even know that subconsciously I was letting that moment define my path. Because even when we make a choice to not do something, it's somehow in response to something. You know what I mean? So it's
It's bottled
it's
up.
It's still defining us.
Yep.
It's still defining us, not in a direct way, but a subconscious indirect way. And it wasn't until actually just a couple of years ago in 2010 that I saw that I was still letting that moment limit me in some way, because I thought when I was 18, you know, I had handled it. And in truth, what I had done, I'd simply shut it down and chosen to stay safe, because that was the safest thing to do in that moment. So I became more reserved, more aware, you know, kind of just always watching my back, still friendly, but less bubbly. And then little by little, I realized that in the space of about a year or two, I gained 40 pounds. And it wasn't the freshman 15. It was definitely something that was there subconsciously that I was equating with being healthy and fit with being in danger, because my internal process was every time that I'd work on losing the extra weight, when I'd get closer to my goal and when I'd start to get compliments from people, instead of being happy about it, and the people could have been my aunt, you know, it wasn't just from men. It was from loving women.
People, I get it. And you're afraid you're going to get hurt again.
Yeah, instead of being happy, a red flag, I would feel the internal twinge go up internally, and the whole cycle of self-sabotage would begin again, and I'd regain the weight. And even when I was exercising and eating healthy, I mean, this went on for 20 years, I was still not letting go of the extra protection, quote unquote. You know what I mean? I didn't understand. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have a question. I think everybody has this question right now, too, is, you know, just before we keep going with the story for a second, I just want to ask you two things. Do you know this person to this day? Like, are you like, I can't believe you did that to me kind of thing? Have you ever had a circle back conversation going, you know, I should have probably prosecuted you kind of thing? But also, do you ever think back and go, and, you know, you can't change the past or anything, but has it ever crossed your mind that you wished that you had prosecuted?
You know, I cut them off for that same experience of safety. It was one of those rich kids with a Porsche, and, you know, and I grew up in a family that was well-to-do, so I'm not putting anything down for, oh, it's all the rich kids or whatever. But I was also afraid that I just didn't want to mess with
getting myself into
trouble. It was just about a year or two. Remember that movie with Jodie Foster and Kelly McGillis?
What's coming to mind right now where, like, almost nobody believes you, or you have to go through this thing where you wanted it, or you've mistaken it for, you know, a consensual. You know, there are so many things that people twist that all around. And to be in that nest of being twisted around.
The statistics are one in three. The statistics in the U.S. are 1 in 3 as far as women. I just participated in 1 Billion Rising, which ending violence against women and girls, because 1 in 3 women in their life will be either sexually or domestically abused. And if you count 1 in 3 women, that is 1 billion women on the planet. And Eve Ensler with Vagina Monologues has created a really great movement of just awareness of ending that level of not only violence but also silence, because it does become a he said, she said. And at that time when I was in college, The Accused, that Jodie Foster movie had came out, and there is that scene, that very poignant scene where it's like, well, if she had not put herself in that situation, it wouldn't have happened. But it's like, but why does it mean that if you're wearing, you know, you're friendly, you're bubbly, you're healthy, and you're wearing, you know, a tank top and a skirt, that all of a sudden you're going to be attacked? It doesn't justify anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I did think about it. And actually, when the week of my TED Talk, I had the conversation with my brother and with my dad, because I had to, I felt like I needed to share with them before, and with my mom, of course, as well. But the response from my brother and my dad was interesting, because both separately, because I had a conversation, my brother was in town and my dad was on the phone. They both said, the first thing they said was, do you want to take action? Do you want to do recourse?
It's coming into my mind too. I'm just like, huh, you know, this shouldn't, you know, but what are you going to do? You know,
and I wish in a way, if I hadn't thought just about myself, and if I had thought about this guy, which is what my mom said,
this guy was
on campus for 4 years, right? And I said, that's true. I didn't even think about it in the moment. I was so focused on staying safe that, frankly, I just didn't. I was in total survival mode.
Yeah.
So I don't wish it at this point, because the time has passed, and I do believe in karma, and I do believe that the universe makes no mistakes, and I do believe that I learned what I needed to learn in bringing the awareness and the support and the safety and the action, you know, participating in things like 1 Billion Rising, and bringing that level of awareness to women and also to the men who love us, because one of my clients said, you know, this is a TED Talk that my teenage girl who's about to go to college next September will definitely watch. This is something
it's a TED Talk that my two oldest boys have watched too, saying, you know, you don't do this to people, you know, because I'm a mother of 4 boys, and I exist in a different, completely different space with 4 boys of, you know, teaching them, treat women with respect, use no means no, you know, and all these things. And, you know, I've got one going off to college, and it's not acceptable behavior.
Yeah, and, you know, for a number of years, I taught Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women, which is a weekend workshop to really create partnership between men and women, from Alison Armstrong. She's an amazing teacher. She does a great body of work. And what we used to say, and I'm sure they still do, in the workshop, I just haven't taught there in many years, is that let's not have 98% of the population as men pay for what 2% of them might do.
Right.
And really empowering women to, and men, you know, to have a great partnership with each other. I love men. I think men are fantastic, and
that
they are.
That was my question to you. How
designed,
you know, are you a man? You know, you just say, I can't stand the sight, or are you all right? Or, you know, I wonder how that goes with that.
My first paper in psychology class that a winter term was, can men and women be friends? And, you know, Harry Met Sally had just come out, and it was the whole, you know, so I, you know, it was learning through a book by Deborah Channon, I think was our textbook at the time, was Difficult Conversations, You Just Don't Understand Me, and really looking at how men and women communicate. I'm fascinated, especially because in that situation, and mind you, that's a traumatic tough situation. I can talk about it like I can talk about a movie right now, because it's been so long. I've done the healing work that I needed to do, the forgiveness, the letting go. But in that moment, realizing that when you say no, and you say no repeatedly, and you say it with force, and you say it with screaming, and nobody hears, in the end, you just choose to survive, right?
Right.
And so, and it's key. Go ahead.
Would you recommend, if a girl or a woman is in that same situation now, would you What would your recommendation be? Yes, I hear you saying survive, but would you give different advice now? Would you say turn around and report that? Or what's the advice that you give to people? I'm sure you're getting asked that.
You know, 22, 23 years later now, there is so much more awareness. There's campus awareness. There is, not that there wasn't at the time, but there are movements like 1 Billion Rising. There is a different level of support where I feel that women can go and have.
I was with you 20, I mean, I wasn't with you literally, but I mean, I get exactly what you're talking about. Finish your thought 1 second here. But I hear what you're trying to say with your, like, 22, 23, 24 years ago. I mean, I was in that college right at that same time, and mm-hmm. it has definitely the level of support and awareness
yes.
has grown.
Yeah.
So it's so much different,
yeah.
isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was scary to walk around alone at night on campus, you know, because I was on the University of Iowa campus, and that
mm-hmm.
was a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
yeah.
I, you know, I don't know what people do now. I'm not there, but I mean,
do it differently, and I would encourage girls to be aware of, without, again, not having 98% of the population pay for what 2% might do, so not being a scaredy cat and not feeling like you can be your beautiful self and self-express, because that's what 1 Billion Rising is about, is being able to be beautiful, self-expressed, inside and out, to be able to be healthy, to be able to be
right.
Bubbly and friendly, and not feel that that's going to get us in any danger. And because there is so much more campus awareness, or just society awareness, you know, especially when, you know, the recent, even in politics, you know, the what's coming up about people saying legitimate rape or not legitimate rape, and you're ready to slap some people around with that. You know, there is a cultural awareness to it. And if it was me, I would not only be outspoken about it in that moment, but not so much just for me, but because I know it impacts the women, you know, that semester, that year, that whole, you know, making sure that if that person is dangerous, that it wasn't just I would love to have taken the responsibility, not just for me, because I don't know what that person did afterwards and mm-hmm. if it happened silently to other women. And that's really the part that to me is, if I had any regrets, that would be the regrets, not having the foresight of knowing the impact that it could have on others as well. So I would encourage
boys and girls out there to
have that.
Well, I think you can rest a little bit on that one, because I think you're doing it well now, particularly. A little bit. You know,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I
hear what you're saying, that maybe if you would
yeah.
have said something, you could have prevented it from happening to other people if the person
right.
had that type of pattern or path, which, you know,
yeah.
I have no idea. But, you know, in your own way, you're doing that now. You know, maybe somebody is listening to this show and this has happened to them. Or maybe some of the advice you're giving will prevent it from happening to
my
them.
My friend Tammy, she's a mom of two girls and two little girls, like two, 3 years old. And she said this is a story that is all too familiar and common, and one that we never want to hear our daughter to relate to
us. And it's
so
not
it's
college either. I mean, I am from a family of, I don't know how many sisters I have. I have to stop and go count. But I have 10 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And a vast majority of them are female. And my mother and father were crazy about keeping us safe, even from little age, you know, who being careful of who they left us with babysitters, and making sure if somebody had friends over, that, you know, we weren't left alone with friends who might hurt. You know, the protection and the awareness was everywhere to make sure that didn't happen, or to try it to prevent it. But also, you know, I don't know that anybody ever said, boy, though, when you go to college, be careful of this. I don't know if I don't know. I don't know if I ever really heard that. If I did, I probably wasn't listening.
I didn't. I certainly never expected to find myself in a situation like this. But the interesting part, Elizabeth, was that what do we do in moments like this? And it doesn't need to be a traumatic experience like this one, but it's an experience, you know, certainly that happened. What do we choose to do with it? And like you said at the beginning of the show, it could be that kids may have had abuse in their upbringing. Like if you listen to Oprah, for example, speaking about her upbringing and saying how when she was abused as a kid and how it taught her to take responsibility for her life and inspired her to teach others how to do the same. Mm-hmm. So we can really take a situation like this, and going back to choice, it's easy to make a choice when it's easy. Choice is even more crucial when we don't like the options or when it looks like we have no options. And I'm not saying it's because I was, you know, healthy and fit and friendly and from Europe and whatever. This happens to girls. It happens to women. It happens to older women. It happens to men. So it's really more about the triumphs in the face of difficulty. It's not about college girls or danger per se. It's really about whenever we face difficulty in life, and it could be difficulty not with abuse in this way, but any difficulty that wants to hold us back. And it could be, you know, a marriage that ends. It could be in any situation where we find that we need to be brave and powerful. How do we get to be that? And we could let a moment define us, or we could choose to do something else. And it's always a choice. Even when it looks like there is no choice, choice is always an option. Sometimes it just takes us longer to find it.
Is people get stuck with choice making because fear kicks in. They're like, if I make that choice, what's going to happen? It's choice making is really kind of like a complete and total fear of the future and fear, you know, anxiety and so forth. So making a choice out of fear and making a choice out of courage are two different cats. For sure.
Completely, completely. And sometimes I have one of my best friends who is not making a choice right now because what he's, you know, he's caught in two situations where he's like, I just don't want anybody to be hurt. And
yeah, so I just don't want to make a choice. That's an even more interesting thing where you just sit in limbo land and just, then you're stalled out. And, you know, it's amazing when you do. The thing about choices, though, that's so cool is, even if you make the wrong one, whatever wrong might be in your world, you know, if you get there and you go, whoa, that could have been done better. I mean, I've made some doozy mistakes, but in that mistake or failure or pain or whatever, it's something always teachable happens.
We can always shift. It's like a bicycle going, you know.
Yeah.
It's like it's so much easier to course correct once the bicycle is going.
But get
if
it
we
going.
Try to get it right, yeah, if we try to get the bicycle straight, perfectly straight before we go, we're just going to end up on the sidewalk. Like,
oh, yeah, and I think back to my divorce, you know, and that was, gosh, I don't know how long ago that was now. And I call my ex-spouse and I are very good friends. I call him the spouse formerly known as Michael. And I don't call him, you know, ex-husband or anything like that, just the spouse formerly known as Michael. And, and you know, we get along great, and we have our two older boys live with me, and they visit him, and, they, you know, it's all good. But, boy, I can remember the turbulence through that choice in 1998-ish, 99-ish, going, you know, this isn't working out.
That's a really key point, because what I've noticed about choice is that we're either expanding or contracting. We're either living on purpose or shrinking away, and our choices have a direct impact on that. Our choices help us manage our life's purpose.
So they either give us
that energy or they drain us.
Yeah, and going with that, you know, I'll just give an example. I don't know what your friend is going through, but, okay, so there I am in Minnesota making a choice. I don't want to be married anymore. I have two small babies. They're both basically baby and baby. I mean, babies. They're right now they're eight, you know, almost 18 and almost 16. They're just 20 months apart or so, you know, kind of thing. And so, I mean, really babies. They're under three kind of thing. And I'm like, uh-oh,
yeah.
I don't want to do this. And I not only don't want to be married, I don't want to live in Minnesota anymore. So I've got double decisions going on, going, I am sick in the cold, blah, 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 going on. And, you know, making that choice to get divorced and move to California and get remarried and be pregnant. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on. There's like five things going, a whirlwind of choice. I remember that being incredibly turbulent. Well, it turned out, look at how it turned out. Take it out 15, 17 years later, or however long it's been. And I'm alive. I'm breathing. Knock on wood, of course, and everything around, because I want to keep it that way as long as I can. But, you know, it's not been perfectly easy. But there's been some cool things that have happened. I mean, Best Ever You has started. I'm signed with Hay House. I've got four beautiful boys. I've been remarried for 14 years. You know, it's okay. But when you're going through those choices and some decisions that you make, expect bumps.
Yeah, and the toughest part is not making the choice, because that's usually, once we've made it one way or the other, then we can, like we said earlier, course correct. And it's not a decision. A decision by, if we look at the actual word, it's like incision, it's like suicide, like the whole vision in there is it's killing off. And that's why sometimes people feel like choices are tough, because it means that we need to kill off something. That's a decision. A choice is choosing to follow what we love and watch out for what doesn't serve us. That's the difference. You know, choice brings us to actually follow through with something that eliminates what doesn't serve us. Exactly, and follow our heart. And sometimes we just got to watch out for choices that bring us to actually betraying ourselves. Because in our society, we're so, you know, I find it pulled towards pleasing others and making a difference for others. And that's important, of course, but not at the cost of betraying ourselves. You know, just like it wouldn't be cool at the cost of somebody else's expense.
Yeah, like, for example, there might be like sitting in a bad marriage. And going, you know, I need to leave this, but never really doing anything about it. And you're like, I'm going to hurt my kids, or I'm going to hurt my spouse, or there's things about
the
do I really like. But, what'd you say?
What was the difference for you? Because it took so much courage. If you had two kids under three and you didn't want to hurt your kids, what was the difference that had you take that step?
I knew... Boy, I'm courageous like that. I don't, you know, I just knew that it was going to be whatever I was going to do. Not that that was so bad, but it just wasn't my heart. And I listened to my heart and my gut. And my heart and my gut were telling me something else. And when your heart and your gut and your brain tell you something else, if you don't listen to that and follow it, that's how you get sick. And I thought, boy, I am going to go down a path here of being really sick if I stay in this. This is, trust me, Mike is lovely, nicest guy. He's been remarried to Renee for, I don't know how long they've been married now, many years. And it just wasn't the right relationship for me. And Minnesota wasn't the right place for me either. I really wanted to live in California. And I really felt like I had truly found my soulmate and the love of my life and everything. And it was just like everything happened all at once. And my parents, I remember, I have a huge family, and they were all like, what in the hell are you doing? You know? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, you
like,
have to, sometimes
what?
You have to make choices in the face of no agreement.
Yeah, there was no agreement. I mean, my mother, my brother told me my mom cried for like a year when I moved away.
Aww.
It's horrible and heartbreaking, but you know, I really needed to see the world, and I wanted my kids to see the world, and my kids to, you know, and we ended up in Maine. I've moved all over the country, and what about, you know, I talked to you about that too. What about you? That's a choice you made to come to a different country. I mean, I thought I was making a huge move going, I'm going to move to a different state.
It's really far from state to state in the U.S. Definitely.
Well, it can
so
be.
It's not like Yeah, it can be, especially Maine to California, California to Minnesota, and how you did it. For me, it was an interval. It's kind of like what you said about with your marriage. It was an inner gut feeling or an inner heart feeling that there was a knowingness about just wanting to be in California. And seriously, I'd only seen it in the movies, but there was just something about, you know, I feel that that's where I belong and that's where I live nowadays. I've been here, you know, for as long as I can remember now, longer than any time spent in Europe. And I love living in Los Angeles. I love, you know, traveling back home and, you know, meeting family around the world, wherever they might be. But Los Angeles is my home, and there's just something about following that inner gut, whether it's a, you know, a moving from Minnesota to California like you did, or choosing to take your two kids under three out of a relationship that wasn't serving the highest good for you, for them, and for Michael, and then really looking at what is it that serves the highest good. And I really believe the universe makes no mistakes. You know, sometimes we need to get together with a particular person so that those children could be born and amazing life that they are. And then we can keep co-parenting and then move on to the next. You know, now you've got an amazing relationship and you've got four boys. And I know at one point you had five because you were fostering. I mean, you're this amazing mom. And just being able to, you know, for me, it's about living my purpose. And my purpose is to live, to learn, and to empower. So wherever it is that I am, it's almost irrelevant, but it's really about as long as I feel like I'm living to the fullest and really learning from whatever the traumas or challenges, and, you know, I ended up losing that 40 pounds, like learning from it, letting go of what needed to be let go, which was the forgiveness of it, and then be able to utilize that and empower others with it. Kind of like what Oprah said with, you know, she went through the childhood abuse and she learned to take responsibility for her own life in that experience, and then was inspired to teach others how to do the same. And she's done it on a massive scale, obviously. So for me, I'm doing it in my community, and I'm happy to, you know, even if I get one email from someone that says, oh my gosh, watching this talk or hearing this story or a seminar, you know, because I'll be teaching next week at another seminar and so on, wherever it is, if it makes a difference for them, then my level of uncomfortableness or my level of challenges that I may have gone through is totally worth it.
Okay. So
I know you can relate to that because you do that as well. You know, we all do.
Yeah, absolutely. And to everybody listening, kind of what we just covered is our what. What is it, and are you sort of listening to your gut intuition, your heart, what your internal chitter chatter, your mind might be playing, you know, some tapes to you to say, you know, we all have that where you're, you know, it's almost like talking to yourself sometimes where you're like, you know, I really should, or does this dress look good? You know, you look on yourself in the mirror and you go, you don't say it out loud, but you're like, oh, does this look good on me? You know, or whatever. It's very funny, but that all of those things that we say to ourselves, that we feel and everything, that's our sort of our what, in a way. And what I'd like to do is now take this call and kind of go through some of the ten things we were talking about and go into our how. And hopefully people listening right now are kind of perked up a little bit on hearing their what. You know, maybe we touched a nerve, but touched a heart, or touched a point, or touched something in your life where you're listening right now going, you know, maybe I want to make a change, or maybe I want to make a little change, or maybe I do want to move across the country or to a different state or place or whatever, who knows. But one of the things that you are is you're a coach, and you help people tap into that power and perhaps even rebalance. Rebalance is a big one. I don't know if it's why or what, it could be women or men, but let's talk about women for a minute, and why do we need to rebalance, and why do we need to think about ourselves?
Well, when you know that bumper sticker, when mom's happy, everybody's happy.
That's our motto in this house.
Right.
Not a bumper sticker. That's like a wall mural.
And I was actually working with one of my clients yesterday down in Sydney in Australia. We were Skyping, and she was working on owning her no and being able to say no. She's a brilliant artist down in Sydney, and she said she felt guilty about saying no. And I really had her see, because she felt it was selfish, and I really had her see how it's selfish not to say no, because if we say yes to everything, then the people that we love and care for the most, you know, our inner circle, end up getting the leftovers. And we're so trained to say yes, yes, yes to everything and everyone that, you know, we end up depleted. And even the coolest Ferrari, if it doesn't have air in the tires or the right levels in the tanks, it's not going to take you anywhere. So really looking at how, as women, is really generous. One of the most generous thing we could do is take care of ourselves, because then we can take care of the rest of our, you know, inner circle, the rest of the world. It's like our light comes from within, and then it shines on the outside, versus just the reverse, and then the people around us getting the leftovers. So it feels counterintuitive, but it's actually one of the most generous things we can do, is to create that balance. And I can speak from experience, because I remember one year I didn't celebrate my birthday until April 6th, and my birthday is January 29th. So I was go, 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 do, do, do. I have no time. I got to keep going. And I was passionate about what I was doing, but then I burned out. I just literally burned out, and I was useless to the rest of the world.
Well,
so
yeah,
we've got to
take
care of ourselves, and we all learn it one way or another, right?
Oh, yeah. I want to take care of one thing here. We only have 5 minutes left to talk.
I know.
And
I
just got an eye on time. I was like, oh, no. Well, I wasn't even looking at the time the whole time we were talking, of course. What decision do you want to make there? Should we run a little long, or do you need to go do you need to go right in 5 minutes?
I have a women's luncheon, but I can go. We can go till like 5 minutes after, if that's okay with you, and then we can wrap it up.
Let's do that. And so
I want
for everybody listening live, it cuts off.
Reach out to me directly if they need to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. For everybody listening live, the show cuts off when we're done, right at the hour mark. So to catch the end of the show, go back to blogtalkradio.com/besteveryou. Just click on the show, and you'll hear the last 10 minutes as we continue. Okay, so
The tool, the how.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I give you one of those? Because we talked about the what. Can we go into the how?
Yeah, please.
Does that make a difference?
Absolutely.
There's one very, very simple tool, because, you know, you'll find people who try to want you to play small so they feel safer, who try to fix things for you, and you'll find your own impetus to fail or to avoid failure, sorry. And I always say, so what if you fail? You know, you can either beat yourself up, or you can beat your results next time. So if you start looking at it, I could beat myself up, I fail, blah, 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 or use the same energy, the same calories, the same, you know, just to beat your results next time. It's the same expenditures of energies and calories, and it's up to you to choose which one empowers you and supports you, and which one is congruent with your heart's desire and purpose. And it's a choice. It's always, always a choice, even when it feels like there is no choice. So we can look deeper by looking at what I call the SKS factor, and it's just three letters, very simple. And SKS is basically, you can do one simple thing. You can either start doing something new, keep doing something, or stop doing something. And in that SKS, start, keep, and stop, even just by shifting it by 1 degree, whatever that situation is that is a challenge. So if it's your health, you can start drinking 2 liters of water a day. That alone will start, you know, getting your health and things moving. The keeping doing, maybe you're already walking around the block, or you can keep doing your meditation or your yoga or whichever it is. And maybe something you want to stop doing, like I know you did, for example, you stopped doing sugar for a number of days. And you did fantastic with it.
Plus.
So even shifting it 1 little degree like this for X number of days, that'll be at the beginning of the how. And then if you feel like you're really, really stuck, I want to gift your listeners an hour with me. Just reach out to me, and we'll work through something that's private, that's that's a challenge, and we'll get you in action by the top of the hour. Like,
cool.
Really, my gift, my pleasure. I just get juiced up by being able to do that with people. So
let's talk about soul, real quick. Let's talk about Soul Woman versus
yes.
Wonder Woman versus
yes.
Wonder Woman. There's a book, Wonder Woman, where you're just wandering around doing all these different things, and nobody knows what, it's like I do a million things and which one's going to stick. And that's the lady who was with us at Best for You at the beginning. But Wonder Woman is the, like, I'm going to do everything and I'm going to do it exceptionally perfectly. And I'm going to not only be like, you know, the mother of four boys, but the PTA volunteer, the CEO, the radio host, the author,
the
best wife in the world, the great daughter,
yeah.
The list is 150 things long
yeah.
that, you know, on any one given day I'm supposed to be, right?
Yes. That's what our culture tells us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's exhausting and it's unsustainable. It is just not sustainable. Soul Woman is something that was really a response to Wonder Woman, where she comes from that balance. You know, we're all busy entrepreneurs, busy moms, busy 9 to 5, busy rebalancing, busy whatever it is that we're juggling, right? And so Soul Woman is the response by looking, okay, what is one quality that is key to me, that if I have that quality, the rest of the world would be in much better shape. And to me, it's, for example, when I have a sense of peace and groundedness.
Yeah.
And so Soul Woman comes from that, okay, what is it that nurtures that peace and groundedness, even if I just did that for 5 minutes?
Sometimes I have to do that opposite. Like, I have to know what that's not. For example,
yes,
like, I know the world.
To be what it is not. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like,
absolutely.
Like,
just
keep me away from glue guns. I mean, like, I am a disaster. I am so bad at crafts. It's scary. Like, you know how you try to, you know, you have babies and you just want to sit and, like, cut stuff out and make little things and, man, I am so bad at that.
Well, there is a thing about, that's the difference, actually, for Wonder Woman and Soul Woman, the context in which they exist is different. Wonder
yeah.
Woman exists in perfectionism.
Yeah.
Versus Soul Woman is a sense of excellence. And the difference between perfectionism and excellence is perfectionism is a place to get to, and we never get there.
Right.
Like, we could have gotten it perfect on Tuesday, and now welcome to Wednesday. Right? We could have gotten it perfect.
See my
yeah,
hair right
we could
now.
Have gotten it perfect with our dad, and now we got to get it perfect with Billy.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever. It's like the job is never done. It's thankless, and it's endless, and it's exhausting. Versus when we come, instead of perfectionism, when we come from a place of excellence, perfectionism being a place to get to, excellence is a place to come from.
Yeah.
When we come from that groundedness, from that being the best mom, but not as a being the best mom as a place to get to, like, we got to get to 100, but a place to come from, there's so much more space,
yeah.
and there's no failing in that. And ultimately, where we're coming from is where we're going anyways. And that really gives us a shift, you know, even just in the awareness.
You know, why do you think women have that more than men? There's a lot of, you know, when we're done with this call, will you do me a favor? So maybe we could have a next call in the next few weeks or something about
yeah.
the lean in. Look at lean in versus lean out. There's a whole
yes.
thing
yes.
in the media right now going on about,
mm-hmm.
it's the mommy wars, only it's termed lean in, lean out. Should I work? Should I not? And it's mm-hmm. also got a real big spin on it of we live in a man's society kind of thing. It's that whole thing
mm-hmm.
is brewing
do, yeah.
right now in the media, and there's commentary going flying around, and I don't want to touch it right now, but
it's
you know,
a bigger
3 minutes left.
Yeah.
It's a huge conversation, but I think we could have it, and it would actually be kind of fun, and our listeners, because I really don't think there's an answer. I mean, I think we're just going to all chat about it, and whatever you're going to do, you're going to do.
The inquiry.
It,
yes.
Yeah, go be your soul woman and figure out it. You know, what makes you happy? Go for it. But
yeah, and
why
the soul woman, we can do that SKS. Just one thing we can start doing, stop doing, and keep doing, and that'll be a start. But why do we think that men are not so much caught up in it? Is that
yeah.
what your question
yeah,
was?
Well, yeah, like somebody on the news today said, you'll never hear the term working father. There won't be Working Father magazine. And I'm sitting there going, what a great idea. There needs to be. My husband did 5 loads of laundry yesterday.
Amen.
Seriously. Amen. You know, and he's like, he was listening to that going, what a perfect idea, because, you know, I'm here, I'm helping, and I'm a lawyer, you know, kind of thing. And I have a job. I'm helping. I do the dishes. I make dinner. I do laundry. I take the kids to their things. I don't get what they're talking about.
Men have a very different and super smart relationship to their needs. And they know not only that they're a great Ferrari, like we know we're a great Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that they know to ensure to get the tires with the right amount of air and the tanks with the fluids and everything.
And we don't.
Unfortunately, we don't. And unfortunately, when they do that, it has them, and this is also something that I did learn from my work with Alison Armstrong years back, was that in our culture, when they do that, they do come across as selfish. And,
oh, my gosh, don't we? We,
right?
Well, either person does, but we come across as we get guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we feel the biggest case of the guilt ever. Oh, I feel like going and getting my hair and nails done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I go through it all the time still, and I've been a mother for 18 years. I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave the house now for a while, you know, kind of thing. And it's like,
yeah.
Mom's got to go.
Yeah.
But I hear you, and I know it's a kind of a can of worms at the last minute here. But what a cool conversation with you today. I've had so much fun.
It's a great, great topic. I would be happy to continue. I'd be happy to hear from anyone who either has questions or, you know, because we've talked about some traumas or some tough choices and challenges. If there's anyone that feels that there's something that they don't necessarily want to share in a chat, but they want to share personally one-on-one with me, either reach me through my site or reach me through Elizabeth. I would like to gift you a 1-hour complimentary session that will be just custom private for you in an area where you feel somewhat not living to that fullest potential, or that there's some healing or some stuckness that needs to occur, and I'll be happy to do that together. It's really something that is almost like my tithing. You know, it's something that I like to give to people because, you know, it was given to me and I want to pay it forward. So,
do you work with coaches too? You know,
absolutely.
I think you have some wonderful coaching tips and techniques and things like that, especially when we talk on the radio. And, you know, I think it'd be neat for coaches to be able to spend a little bit of time with you, maybe not
absolutely
a full hour or something, to learn better coaching tips and techniques. That would be
absolutely
kind of a neat, like a little, maybe we should do like a little coaches circle sometime or something.
Absolutely.
I got so many ideas been in from this.
Love to. I mean, like on Friday I'm working with marketers. On Monday I'm working with beauticians.
Cool.
You know, so there's different groups and the one-on-one. So whatever, how I work it is, we find what the challenge of the members are, and then we reverse engineer a solution to it together.
Nice.
That's how I like to work. So absolutely. If you guys out there have any groups, including you, of course, reach out and let's do it. What I'm here to live, to learn, and to empower. It's my purpose.
Okay, 2 more minutes. I'm going to do 2 more minutes with you because we did not mention Wellington.
Wellington, he's right here.
I love that dog. That's the cutest. Okay, my dog needs to plug her ears for a minute because I thought I had the cutest dog ever. I have a big labradoodle. She's black and she's adorable, and her name is Tessa. But that dog is so cute. It is so,
he's got his own Facebook page, and people are like, wait, I'm friends with Wellington on Facebook. I'm like, really? Okay.
So cute.
I walk down the street literally and people say, is that Wellington? I'm like, yes.
Okay, so who's Wellington? Who's this dog?
He is, well, in a way, he's my, you know, I've rescued him a few years ago. But you know how that goes when you rescue dogs.
They
really rescue you. Absolutely. So he's a golden doodle. And he's really the reason why, so it's a half golden, half poodle, which is in the top 5 breeds of smart dogs. So he's smart, he speaks all the languages I do, he'll understand my mom, my aunt, speak to them in all these different languages around the world. He's traveled around the world, to Europe a few times and around the U.S. and so on. And we've just done a little short film. So if you go on my site, you'll be able to not get to see the film because we're about to release it. We have the Gratitude Summit and the Gratitude Awards coming up next month, and we'll release the 5-minute version of this little short film. And basically in this little short film, he teaches people how to be themselves, which is what dogs are great at. You know, it's a comedy about this Verizon wireless geeky type of geek squad type of guy who couldn't get a date to save his life, not very lucky with the ladies until he meets Wellington. And the secret message underneath it is really about being ourselves. And that's what I've learned from my dog, is how to really just be more self-expressed. And for those of us who have, you know, four-legged children, we know how they can teach us that, right?
And, you know, I'm going to share this with you just really fast. Our cat passed away this week. We've had the cat for, I don't remember a day where my son, Cameron, who's 13, and this cat weren't asleep together at night. It's a cat we had to keep out of the crib, you know, the whole bit. I mean, the cat and Cam are just completely bonded. And there's a picture on my Facebook, and our cat passed away. I actually had to make a choice to put the cat to sleep, which was horrible.
Yeah, it's a tough
horrible.
Story.
And I went to Wellington's Facebook for a little pick me up, for a little smile, because your dog smiles. And I was just like, oh,
because
I mean, I really do think, like, I mean, I love my dog too, but like, I really do think that, like, Casco and Wellington are two of the most preciously cute animals ever. And Casco's a cat and Wellington's a dog. And my cat's passed away, and my heart has been broken all this long. Just a heavy, heavy feeling. And I actually went to your dog's website, your dog's Facebook page, and I was like, that dog, it made me laugh, actually. Actually laughing out loud in a time where I was, like, crying. I'm like, I got to find something here that'll just – and I'm like, I know. I'm going to Wellington's Facebook.
And how you can find him on Facebook. Thank you for that, because I cannot even imagine the emptiness in your heart.
Awful. And sometimes non-cat people don't totally get that. If you don't love cats, you don't get it. But this was a cat of cats, you know, like almost like a dog. Yeah. It would give kisses. It would, headbutt. It would do tricks. It would come when it was called. And
amazing.
We would drive up and the cat would be looking out the window like, are you there yet? You know, just total
they
doggy
really
cat.
Are.
Yeah.
Furry angels. Little furry angels. For those of you who want to find Wellington and want to find out when the movie comes out and all those fun, sweet, empowering, laughing things, it's just facebook.com/WellingtonTheMovie all together,
cool.
And you can be friends with him. And really, he's the reason why in the end I ended up losing that extra weight, because I took my dog. He was the one that helped me heal, because I took him to a healer here in Los Angeles. There was a skin condition the vets couldn't figure out. So since we're in Los Angeles, you know, we take our dogs to healers. It's kind of silly things we do in LA. But that session was with a really cool Indian guru type of guy. And after he was done working with my buddy, he turns to me and just simply asked me, what about you? What trauma have you had? Out of the blue it came. And in that moment, because now it's 20-some years later, I have different tools so I can answer that question differently. And even though I didn't work with that Indian guru guy on me because I had brought Wellington to him, that question percolated with me, like in your book, you know, percolated. It stayed with me. And that's really where the shift came, because then I chose to do something different about it rather than bury it again, which is the only choice that I felt I had when I was 18. And instead of burying it, I was able to solve it, work with it, through it. And Alanis Morissette likes to say, you know, the only way out is through. A feeling is not bottomless. You get through the other side. And then in that sense, once the healing came out, then all the weight was able to go off, because it was just literally a physical way of protecting, at least in my experience. So he saved me in so many ways.
I love hearing that. Yeah, I just think that's just special. So what a good way to end the show. And thank you for the extra time. I kept you a little bit longer than I know we agreed, but I just love talking
to you.
So lots of love.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Give
Brianna
a big hug and everybody. We love everybody at the New Hollywood, and Alexis and Brianna and everybody. So thank
they're doing
you.
Great
and
work. Yes.
They're beautiful people. So anyway, all right. Lots of love. Thank you for being with us. And
my pleasure.
Okay, so here's
thanks
the scoop. Listening. Thank you. Here's a scoop for tomorrow. We're going to break format a little bit tomorrow for our show, and we have a sort of a media discussion going on tomorrow with entertainment guru Randy Siegel. Dr. Katie will be on, and I will be on, and we're going to have a 90-minute show talking about it's like mind media control. Is media shaping our values? We're still thinking about what we're going to talk about, but for now we just invite you to join us and have a conversation about talk shows, the news. We don't know what we're going to say tomorrow, but we promise it won't be judgy. It will be very sweet in our best ever you sweet selves way. But it should be a really interesting conversation. So that's tomorrow at 1 p.m. And then on Tuesday, March 26th, we have Lisa Christensen coming on for a one-hour chat starting at 1 p.m. So thank you, Pina DeRosa. Please visit Pina's website at pinaderosa.com. And you can visit her on Facebook or on Twitter at Grace and Passion. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you have a beautiful day. Take care. Bye, Pina.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.